All right. Welcome back to Jackman Radio, everybody who has tuned in before. And for you first-time listeners, I welcome you to Jackman Radio. We're an independent podcast from New Hampshire. We pride ourselves on pop culture, comedy, entertainment, showbiz, and independent political analysis. I'm so psyched tonight to welcome back to the podcast Mr. Roger Stone. Roger, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm really, really happy to be here. As you know, I was scheduled to be here last night. I had a little bout of laryngitis because I've been out trying to make America great again every single night. And I finally ran out of steam, but I'm fully recovered, and I'm glad to be back talking to my many friends in the Granite State, as well as the people around the country who tune in for your great show.
Yeah, and this is, as we've said, this is your second time on the show. A lot has happened since your first appearance, which I believe was in 2015, if I'm correct on that.
Boy, you aren't kidding.
It seems like another lifetime ago.
Well, the whole thing is kind of surreal. I mean, there are certain points in which you look back at it and you it's a nightmare, really. When the full force of the United States government comes after you, and you, like an average American, you think, well, I'm going to have a chance to defend myself. I'll get a fair trial. But then the judge systematically denies you every single possible reasonable defense. No, you can't. So I'll just give you an example. The underlying premise in my case is that the Russian intelligence conducted an online hack of the Democratic National Committee. And that information allegedly made its way to me, to the Trump campaign through me. Then when they couldn't prove that, they dropped back to, well, Stone knew that it was coming, even though he didn't deliver it. Well, I could have used expert testimony and forensic evidence to prove that there never was any online hack of the Republican National Committee. But of course, the judge would not allow that. The government claimed that the so-called CrowdStrike's report proved that the Russians had hacked the DNC, but she wouldn't allow my defense lawyers to have a copy of it during my trial. And the head of CrowdStrike's, which was the IT firm hired by the Democratic National Committee to examine their computer servers, actually testified before the House Intelligence Committee under oath, as I did, and he admitted that he had no proof whatsoever of that. But his testimony was classified at the time of my trial, and I wasn't allowed to have it. So I can give you 100 different examples of how this was a Soviet-style railroad job. I really didn't do anything wrong. They never produced any evidence of Russian collusion. Oh, but I did meet with a Russian. A Russian definitely contacted me and said he had dirt on Hillary Clinton. Problem is, he turned out to be an FBI informant who was only in the country based on a visa signed off on by the head of the Miami FBI office. And our meeting lasted less than 10 minutes because I told him to pound sand. So, I mean, the whole thing is it's surreal when you look back at it, but it is not fun to be targeted in what really was a witch hunt.
Yeah, that whole thing is insanity. And at the time, I read a lot about what Ray McGovern wrote, the former CIA agent of 27 years for veterans, for veteran intelligence officers or professionals for sanity, that the DNC thing was most likely internal, that came from someone from the inside who leaked information.
Correct. I wanted to call McGovern and Bill Binney as witnesses at my trial. They were very helpful to my attorneys in terms of preparing the proof that the DNC was never hacked, but the judge would never allow either one of them to testify.
And I was reading another recent news story, Roger, about, and I couldn't find the audio or any source on this, so it probably doesn't exist, but about the alleged threats against either Congressman Nadler or Swalwell. That sounds like another congressional thing.
This is total BS. So a media outlet called Mediaite, first they say they want me to comment on an audio that they won't play for me.
Right.
There's an audio in which they claim that I threaten the lives of two congressmen. And I said, well, you're asking me to comment on something you won't play. Then they posted this really crude audio recording in a busy restaurant, very difficult to hear. And I immediately went out, and I had to pay for this, of course. I used the best two cutting edge AI detection software programs out there. And one of them came back and said, there's a 96.4% chance that this is fabricated. The other one said there was a 94.6% chance this was fabricated. You can listen to it over and over again. It's not, you can't even really hear what I say, but then what happens is MSNBC, CNN, The Guardian, Salon, the rest of the jackals in the fake news media, they don't bother to do any due diligence. They don't examine it, have an expert examine it. They just take it at face value. Oh, Stone threatened. It's not even logical. I didn't threaten anyone. And it's all based on an anonymous source that says it happened in a particular restaurant. And I was with a particular friend of mine. It's nonsense, but it does show you the real danger of AI.
Yeah.
Because as soon as this show's over and I can get a recording of it, I can produce an audio of Jackman planning to rob a bank and put it up online. And you'll say, wow, Eric Jackman's going to rob a bank. Listen to this. And it'll cost me about $130.
Yeah.
So this is the next generation of smear. But this is categorically false. It's just another, attack. This is bitterness based on the fact that I escaped the deadly snare that Adam Schiff and Robert Mueller and these thugs set for me. Unlike Michael Cohen, I didn't fold. They pressured me relentlessly. You can make this all go away. You can avoid prison. All you've got to do is testify against Donald Trump falsely. You have to make lies up or actually read the lies we tell you to say. And I refuse to do that. It's that simple.
Yeah, that's got to be unbelievably frightening. I mean, I remember seeing the footage on CNN of the raid at your house, and I was just thinking, oh my God, is this for real? They're really going after him.
Yeah, and what's amazing is how coincidental was that CNN just, they happened to be in the neighborhood.
They had the cameras ready.
I mean, I actually, watching from an upstairs bedroom window, I had a pretty good inkling they were coming. I wasn't positive, but I was pretty sure. So I got up early. I took a shower. I put on my iconic Roger Stone Did Nothing Wrong t-shirt, which, by the way, you can get yours at stonezone.com in the shop. And I was sitting in the upper, the only window in the upstairs of the house where you can see the entire front yard, which happened to be a bathroom window, and I had a Bible in my hand. And I was reading a verse, and my phone rang. It was a Fort Lauderdale police officer who shall remain unnamed. And he said, hey, are you home? And I said, yeah, why? He said, well, I'm down at Starbucks, and I bet there's 30 FBI agents here, and I get the impression they're heading to your home. And I said, well, I've been expecting them. And at that exact moment, I saw the truck pull up, and I saw CNN set up their camera tripod. Totally coincidental. I mean, operating, on a hunch. Must have had a hunch that at 6 o'clock in the morning, I would be arrested. And then, of course, they showed up. They brought this battering ram up to the front door as if I wasn't going to answer it. They came in 17 armored vehicles. There was a government helicopter overhead, two amphibious units with frogmen. Every one of these agents wearing full SWAT gear, brandishing a M4 fully automatic assault weapons. All they had to do was tell my lawyers who they spoke to the day before, because we turned over 30 pages of text messages that proved that Randy Credico was my source in terms of the fact that Julian Assange was going to publish negative information on Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. I heard it from two places. One, the internet. He said it 100 times in interviews. But also Credico told me this was coming. He also told me that when I asked him how he knew this, he said, quote, I know a woman who works for Assange. Now don't ask any more questions. I have that text messages, that text message. The judge would not allow it to be presented as evidence in my case. So in any event, you know, my wife, who's hard of hearing, she didn't hear me being taken into custody. She woke up looking down the barrel of two assault weapons. She didn't know if it was a home invasion. She had no idea what was going on. It was a nightmare. I guess the purpose was intimidation or putting on a show for the American people. I do know this. I was arrested at 6:06. At 6:11, a person with CNN texted my lawyer my still sealed arrest warrant. And it wasn't unsealed by a magistrate until 10:30 that morning. So how could CNN possibly have it at 6 o'clock? It had no court markings on it, no timestamps. But if you looked at the metadata tags in the document, it had the initials of the man who wrote it, Andrew Weissman, the prosecutor for Mueller, obviously also the person who leaked it in violation of the law. The judge, of course, was completely uninterested in this.
So I wanted to ask you, Roger, when was the moment you heard or got news that there was going to be a pardon? I mean, bring me through that moment, how you felt, what those circumstances were like.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there was never any guarantee from anyone that there would be the pardon. So when Jerry Nadler and Eric Swalwell and Adam Schiff and Hillary Clinton and many others say, oh, Stone had a deal from the beginning. He was going to cover up for Trump, and in return, he was going to get a pardon. To which I say, cover up what? The Russian collusion that didn't exist? There was nothing to lie about. I had no motive to lie, and there was nothing to cover up. But I hadn't talked. I went from talking to Trump virtually every day for, you know, many years to not being able to talk to him at all. Once I was charged, his lawyers would not let me talk to him, and my lawyers would not let me talk to him, and he wasn't allowed to talk to me. And therefore, I didn't know what he would ultimately do. I made my case in public. I mean, I was very forthright of the fact that, A, I hadn't done anything wrong. B, this was a railroad job. But remember, I was gagged by the judge. I was not allowed to defend myself. And therefore, I had to be very cautious about what I said in public. But I made it very clear I was praying for a pardon, which, as you know, ultimately came. First, he commuted my sentence. And then later, at Christmas of 2020, after the election, he pardoned me. Now, if you go online, finding that pardon is really difficult. Every mainstream story will say, oh, Stone had his sentence commuted. Very few continue to include the truth is, which I got a full unconditional pardon. I didn't do anything wrong. The whole thing is really a week of fabrication.
Yeah, and the information, is that one of the things, I think I remember when you were on Twitter before you were kicked off, was it you who tweeted that John Podesta's time in the barrel is coming soon?
Well, what I said was the Podestas, that's a plural, speaking right to both about both John and Tony, who had made a lot of money as lobbyists for Eastern European countries. So context, Manafort was being tortured. Paul Manafort, who was Trump's campaign manager, was being tortured for his working in Ukraine. And I posted the Podestas, more than one person, time in the barrel is coming, meaning their work for the oligarchs in Eastern Europe, including Russians, would become public. The government never produced any evidence that I knew in advance that WikiLeaks had obtained John Podesta's emails. On November 3rd, 2020, they only by court order, actually, the Justice Department put out a press release at midnight. Who puts out a press release at midnight? on election day, the busiest media day of the year, in which even they couldn't sugarcoat the fact that they had never found any proof that I had advanced knowledge of the fact that Podesta's emails had been obtained and would be published, nor did they have any evidence that I received anything from WikiLeaks. But they had that redacted in the hopes that they would never have to admit that they had really found no evidence of Russian collusion, WikiLeaks collaboration, or any other crime on my part.
Right. Now, of course, this was all before WikiLeaks and Podesta emails and everything. What did you make, you know, rest in peace, Andrew Breitbart. What did you make of Andrew Breitbart's tweet about John Podesta all those years ago?
I must admit, I don't really know. He was a friend of mine. He was a much better and closer friend to my friend, Eric Mancow Mueller, known as the Mancow, a Chicago radio legend. And Breitbart told Mancow that what he had on Podesta would destroy him and bring down the entire Clinton campaign. I don't know what that was, but it was not innocuous, that's for sure.
I mean, look at his art collection, Roger. Have you seen, you know, the art that he's got in his house? That's gross stuff. Infowars.com.
It's pretty strange. I must admit. But here's the larger point, which is Manafort is charged with lobbying without registering a Foreign Agents Registration Act, and he gets, you know, hard time for that, 2 years. But he hired Tony Podesta to lobby on behalf of the Ukrainians, which he did. Podesta didn't file either, but no prosecution is brought against him. We see this happening right now with Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden is clearly representing the interests of the Chinese, the Russians, the Ukrainians, the Romanians. He never bothered to register, yet he will not be held liable for that.
And we did talk about this last time, Roger. Obviously, you've been writing about the Kennedy assassination for many years, and I think we touched on it last time. But since Trump has been in office and out of office, obviously the 2017 timeline has come and passed with all the documents. And I have to give President Trump credit. He did allow the release of many of them, and that's been very helpful to the JFK research community. Can you give us some insight into your lobbying President Trump on that and your interest and a little bit on that, and why maybe ultimately they didn't all come out?
Well, as you know, I wrote a book called The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, in which I make a case that Lyndon Johnson, Central Intelligence Agency, organized crime, Big Texas Oil, ultimately the Secret Service, with a friendly cover-up by the FBI, are responsible for the death of John Kennedy. That book holds up extremely well, particularly in view of new information, in which, for example, the Parkland Hospital doctors came forward in a documentary and said, we saw wounds consistent with Kennedy being shot from both the front and the back. That's the end of the Warren Commission conclusions and the so-called, the magic bullet that changed directions in midair. So Trump had the responsibility in 2017. The Congress had set 2017 as the year for the potential release of all the still classified information. And I spoke to him about it, and I told him I thought he should release it all. And he said he was inclined to do so. He said, I mean, it's been over 50 years now. I think people need to know. But then in the end, and he did release a lot.
He
released about 80% of what was still remaining. And Oliver Stone has done an excellent follow-up film utilizing the stuff that was released, not by Biden, but the stuff that was released by Trump. There's a lot of meaningful stuff there. But in the end, he still held back about 20%. And when I asked him why, he told me that Mike Pompeo, the CIA director, had essentially persuaded him that releasing all of it would endanger our sources and methods, which is, of course, absurd because our sources are all dead. And in terms of methods, well, if the CIA is involved in killing an American president, we probably ought to know that. So the can got kicked down the road to Joe Biden. Biden released a little more, but there are still documents left that we haven't seen. So people said to me, what are they hiding? What could it be? I think it's pretty obvious. I think what you get is the definitive proof that the Central Intelligence Agency was deeply involved in the assassination of Kennedy. They not only knew who Oswald was, but Oswald was an asset. He was tricked into being there. I don't think he understood that he was going to be, let me coin a phrase, the patsy. He was a patsy. He was the fall guy. I think he realized it in real time. But even taking his fishing pole into the office so they could later say, oh, that was that thing he had wrapped in a cloth, that was a rifle. No, it was a fishing pole.
Oh, the curtain rods?
Curtain rods, right.
That's even suspect whether that whole story is even true. But no, I agree. There's so many anomalies. But I also heard Judge Napolitano said that President Trump said, you know, if I told you what it was, you wouldn't want to release the files either. Did you hear any insight on that?
Yeah, he told me something very similar. What he said to me was, Raj, it's so terrible. It's so terrible. I can't even tell you. It's so terrible. Someday you'll know. So, I mean, I think the bottom line of that is the American government. I mean, we did it. It is absolutely true that when they got Kennedy's body to Bethesda Medical Center and the Joint Chiefs, including Curtis LeMay, behind glass watching the autopsy, that LeMay ordered them to remove Jack Kennedy's testicles. What was the point of that?
I never heard that. I heard that he had a cigar that he was ashing, and he's basically smirking while watching all this.
I'm certain that he was happy, but he never got the nuclear war that he was looking for.
Yeah. Wow. That's horrendous. Those people are psychopaths, and there's still a lot of them down there. That's for sure.
Indeed.
So I'd like to get your take, Roger. Last year, I spent about 6 months working for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on his campaign up here in New Hampshire. As one of his organizers in the state. So I would just be interested on your thoughts on RFK Jr. And obviously there's a lot of synergy between RFK Jr. and MAGA and President Trump and where you see his campaign going.
Well, it's a very difficult question. I thought that that had he stayed in the Democratic Party, that the same people who kneecapped Bernie Sanders would have kneecapped him. On the other hand, because I myself bolted the Republican Party in 2012 to support Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party nominee, the former governor of New Mexico, who's a very good man. I had a keen understanding of how difficult it is just to get a third party candidate on the ballot, never mind an independent on the ballot. Remember that the laws governing ballot access are written by Republicans and Democrats working together to make it as difficult as they possibly can. They don't want competition within their parties, and they certainly don't want competition in a general election. So I'm not sure that the people currently managing Robert Kennedy's campaign understand how difficult, arcane, and Herculean a task this is. There are states where you can just pay a fee and sign a form and you'll be on the ballot, but not big states, not swing states. So it's unclear to me whether he can get on the ballot in enough states to even theoretically reach 270 electoral votes. Obviously, on some issues, those issues, particularly where he agrees with President Trump, like sealing our border, for example, I'm in agreement with him. I'm also deeply skeptical of Big Pharma and the COVID-19 shot. On the other hand, there are other issues, particularly his radical position on climate change. By the way, we do have climate change. Happens four times a year. It's about it. His position on abortion is one that doesn't work for me. He's essentially for, you know, abortion at any time. I'm a little unclear on reparations. I mean, he's tried to clarify it. Look, he's a Kennedy. He's very smart. But I think on some issues, he's quite good. I'm not sure he gets on the ballot in enough states at the end of the day. We shall see.
What about seeking the Libertarian nomination? There's rumblings going on about that. He attended the California Libertarian primary convention a few weeks ago.
I saw that. I mean, it was interesting to me only because first I saw him say he had no interest in the Libertarian Party nomination. Then I saw him talking to Libertarians. To me, that meant, well, maybe his drive to get on the ballot as an independent is not going very well. On the other hand, having briefly been a member of the Libertarian Party myself, you know, he's not really a pure libertarian in any way. And they're very rigid in terms of purity. I mean, look, the Libertarian Party, and I've still got a lot of friends that are in it, but it in itself has wings. There are right libertarians, small government, but realistic. There are left libertarians who think, well, why do we need a national defense? We should have no national defense because we should never have war. And, you know, child pornography, all pornography should be legal in a, you know, which I can't obviously agree with that. I guess here's my one observation. If you're an anarchist, then you shouldn't be in any political party by definition. So I don't know that Robert Kennedy, although he might get a boost out of their automatic ballot access in a number of states, and they do have manpower to get on the ballot in other states, I'm not sure that he can ever measure up to their need for near ideological purity.
Right. Yeah, of course they will have the ballot access. And the New York Times just put out today that Bobby was the top of his VP list right now is Aaron Rodgers and Jesse Ventura. What do you make of that, Roger?
I like Jesse. Jesse's a friend of mine, but Jesse's going off the deep end. He thinks Fidel Castro is a great guy. No, Fidel Castro is a communist murderer, a brutal, brutal dictator, or he was. Jesse's doesn't have the energy level, in my opinion. I like Jesse. He's a good guy. He's done a lot of good work in terms of exposing corruption of the federal government, but it takes a lot of energy. Who's the other person you mentioned? Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, I don't know who that is. Who is Aaron Rodgers?
He's the star quarterback for the New York Jets. He was with the Green Bay Packers for like 15 years. Good friends with Bobby, you know, big platform, very well known, but he's an NFL quarterback. So
is he knowledgeable on issues or government?
Yeah, he's politically inclined. He spoke out very eloquently against mandates and against lockdowns and pharma overreach. So he's definitely really good on that stuff. He's good on civil liberties.
Well, what this tells me a couple things. First of all, it tells me that Bobby couldn't get Tulsi Gabbard. That's the first thing it tells me, who would have made a lot of sense for him, but evidently does not want to do it. It also tells me that he's trying to think outside the box, which is a good thing. I mean, the idea of somebody from outside of politics is a good idea. Again, though, I'm still not sure they get on the ballot. What's really interesting, just handicapping it, is while the national polls seem to indicate that he pulls disproportionately from Trump, when you look at individual state polls, it actually appears that he pulls more disproportionately from Biden. Generally speaking, Trump's number stays the same as it is in a two-way race when you test a three-way race. So I think you have to look at this solely on a state-by-state basis. You can't make one broad national judgment.
And you mentioned Tulsi Gabbard. Obviously, it's a hot story right now in the news. She was at Mar-a-Lago for an event. She gave a really great address at CPAC recently. Do you think she's definitely on the short list for VP for President Trump or potentially a cabinet post?
Look, I like her very much for a lot of reasons. First of all, she's a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserve. She's both an Iraq and Kuwait combat veteran. She has stood up to the war machine on the key issues of war, the Second Amendment, life, and the weaponization of our current criminal justice system. She's very strong. She's also very articulate. She's very sure-footed. She's an excellent campaigner. I don't know if there is a short list. In all honesty, President Trump is holding this very close to his vest. The short list that emerged from his interview with Laura Ingraham, if you go back and look at it, that was Laura Ingraham's list rather than Trump's. Trump said, yes, they'd all be excellent. They're all good people. But it's not clear that that is his list. So I don't presume to speak for him. Even if I did talk to him about this, it would be a private conversation and I wouldn't discuss it anyway. But it is my instinct that he's not yet chosen a person. I think he's still considering it. He doesn't have to make a decision until July. So he's got plenty of time. I think she would be excellent. God, do I get beat up on social media for saying that? Oh, she's a former Democrat. That's why I think she's interesting. She was a Democratic member of Congress. Ronald Reagan was a Democrat.
Trump was a Democrat. I used to be a Democrat. Look, you loved me when I was a Democrat. I gave you a lot of money, Hillary. You know, he was a Democrat back in the day.
Yeah, he was very briefly a Democrat. He really became a Democrat just for 2 years. And ironically, it was to protest the war in Iraq. He was against the war in Iraq. He was very disappointed in Bush over the war in Iraq. That was a brief period in which he became a Democrat, but it was only 2 years.
Interesting. I loved when he confronted Jeb about that during the debates in 2016. That was one of the best moments of all the debates, in my opinion.
Well, and it's, the idea suddenly Liz Cheney is the darling of the media elite. And they forgot that her father was a war criminal that lied us into a war costing hundreds of thousands of lives completely unnecessarily. I mean, talk about Darth Vader. There he is right there. Dick Cheney.
Yeah, and Victoria Nuland was also an advisor for Dick Cheney. I don't even know if Democrats know about that. And even if they do, I don't think they even care at this point because as someone who was also against the Iraq War, I've seen that shift happen where now it seems like more on the right are anti-war. And it's like the world's upside down.
Well, look, this whole idea that there's two parties is really a Hegelian device that's used to divide us. The parties, first of all, are not like they used to be. There was a time when the Republican Party had a conservative wing and a liberal wing. That's no longer true. There was a time the Democratic Party had a conservative wing and a liberal wing. That's certainly no longer true. So the parties have become more like the parties in Britain, or at least like the parties in Britain used to be. But even there, both parties have been captured by the globalists and the neocons. You really have one party in Washington. It's the Uniparty. And the Uniparty is against Donald Trump. Trump's nomination is the hijacking of the Republican Party right out from under the Bushes and their country club friends. That's why they're so sore about it. I mean, they tried to laugh him off, which was a gigantic mistake. They consistently underestimated him. And today, at the grassroots, at least, I think he's remade the Republican Party as the party of the middle class, as the party of working families, as the party of non-interventionism, as the party of America First. And I don't think that's going to change. I think even post-Trump, that will continue to be the center of gravity in the party. Who will lead that wing of the party in the future? Well, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, leading up to 2016, I'm sure you were advising him in the lead up to running and actually doing it. I was curious, when was the moment you knew that he was actually doing it? Because he had flirted with it many times or a couple times before and never went through with actually running. So when did you know it was for real and what was that like?
You may find this surprising, but I knew he was really going to run on New Year's Day of 2013. In retrospect, I think he really regretted not running in 2012. He definitely regretted his endorsement of Mitt Romney, who he saw as a gutless loser who would never do what it took to beat Obama. And I spoke to him on New Year's Day, 2013, and he said, you know, I should have run. And I said, yeah, I agree with that. He said, I would have beaten Obama. I said, I agree with that too. He said, I'm not going to make this mistake again. I'm running in 2016. And I said, well, you know, I've heard this before. And he said, I have already applied to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to trademark the phrase Make America Great Again. So I knew from that moment on he was really going to run. When all of these jackals in the fake news media were saying, oh, this is just Trump again, burnishing his brand, basking in the publicity, but he's not really going to do it. I actually knew he was really going to do it.
And then from that moment in 2013, flashing forward to November 2016, you're having a champagne toast with Alex Jones in Texas, and Trump is president-elect. What was that moment like?
Well, it was surreal because
I couldn't believe it.
I mean, I thought there was some prospect that he would win. The late polling in a number of large states, when the Trump campaign wasn't paying for polling, but some of the state Republican parties were, and poring over that data, the trend line in the closing days was to Trump. Undecideds, small number of undecideds, were breaking for Trump. Trump was also out, really outworking Hillary. Hillary was in Chappaqua measuring, you know, looking at swatches to select the fabric for the Oval Office drapes, while Trump was barnstorming in Philadelphia and Milwaukee and Miami and, you know, really working right up till the last minute, pulling out enormous crowds in New Hampshire. Enormous crowds. And I think that I really do that. I think that made a difference. I mean, if you look how narrowly he won Michigan or Wisconsin, for example, or Georgia, those late efforts, while Hillary was basically, you know, already had the champagne bottles open, I suspect. Remember, Hillary paid for this enormous fireworks display in the New York Harbor that was going to be done when she was declared the winner.
It's still very satisfying to go back and watch the clips of everyone. It was at the Javits Center, wherever it was, with the glass ceiling and just the salt harvest. And we were Gary Johnson guys in 2016, but we were at a local inn where we usually watch election returns. And the local Democratic Party was having their election night party. And they were like, oh, you know, we got this in the bag. And then it becomes, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and he becomes inevitable. And it was just, there was a hush in the entire restaurant, and they vamoosed. And Eric and I were sitting there with a friend looking at each other like, are you fucking kidding me? So that was I think he could do it again, Roger. I think he could do it. He very well could shock the world and do it again.
I think he's going to do it again. I saw him a Sunday, and I have to say he's in fighting trim, man. He's in the best mood. He's resolute. He's determined. He's extraordinarily confident. You know, he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders. I think a lesser man would have buckled by now, but his head's in a very good place. I think he's going to win. He's got a lot of obstacles to overcome, but, you know, he's always been underestimated. He's a winner. He's always had amazing luck. I think between Joe Biden's inability to string together a coherent sentence, and the disastrous impact of his policies, now combined with the epic corruption of his son and his brother and his family, now add up on top of that the fact that we now know definitively that Joe Biden retained top secret and classified documents willfully in violation of the law, but he's not going to be prosecuted because he's old, but not so old that he can't be president. That doesn't even make sense. But Donald Trump, who I think actually under the 1997 Presidential Records Act is entitled to retain whatever documents he wants, at least that was true of Bill Clinton in a D.C. court ruling. Most people see through this and they're just like, what? How come there's not one standard? Why does Biden get away with this, but Trump is being prosecuted? Biden was not president when he kept these documents. He never had the authority to even remove them from the secure area.
Right.
Do you think it's possible that the Democrats drop Biden this summer or before to get someone else? Are they locked in?
No, I've said in numerous places now for a couple of years that I think their dream scenario would be to convince Joe not to run. Let him get the delegates to be nominated, let him get right up to the Democratic National Convention, and then announce a few days before the convention that for reasons of his health, he cannot accept the nomination, release his delegates. The convention then would go crazy for Michelle Obama, the most popular Democrat in the country. She, I don't think, wants to do it, but that doesn't mean she won't do it. Those are two different things. And I think ultimately she could be convinced that she is their strongest candidate against Trump. They get the hapless Kamala Harris, who it doesn't have senile dementia, but who makes even less sense than Joe. They get her to step aside for a Supreme Court nomination or the promise of one. And they drop in Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, who would be the source of hundreds of millions of dollars of special interest money for vice president. I think that could be their ticket. I want to make it clear, I'm not hoping that that happens. I really want a Biden-Trump rematch. And Biden is, guys I know who were in the Senate with him say, he's very high opinion of himself. He is a very, very stubborn. He really does think he is the best qualified person in the country, which, of course, clearly he's not. My late mother used to refer to him as that Irish blowhard. That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, he really is. So if the Donald gets back in there and wins in 2024, what are some things that you think he should do differently and avoid doing that he did in his first term to have even greater success?
Look, I think it's, personnel is policy. He's got to be very careful about who he puts into key positions. If someone went to Harvard or Yale, that means they're not qualified. I mean,
exactly.
We need to avoid these elitists. I think in his defense, he came to Washington thinking, well, the Republicans will now rally around me. The Democrats will try to oppose me. The lines are drawn. He didn't understand that half the Republicans who were being very nice to his face because he was so popular were knifing him in the back. So I think you'll be much more careful this time. And I think you're going to see a cabinet of people like Tulsi Gabbard. Should I pull that out of the air? I don't know that, but that's supposition on my part. But people like that. Rand Paul. Rand Paul would be a great Secretary of State.
I'd love to see that. Yeah.
How about Colonel McGregor?
Colonel McGregor would be terrific. I mean, I would make him chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
I like if Bobby doesn't make it to the White House or win. I'd love to see Trump make him director of the CIA.
Well, that would certainly be fitting since they had a hand in killing both his uncle and his father. But I wouldn't mind seeing Bobby at HHS either, or the FDA. How would that be?
Or Attorney General. He could be the Attorney General too. That would be interesting. But yeah, there's a lot of synergy. I mean, a lot of the RFK events that I was a part of and planned and was at, we had MAGA hats. We had people there that love Bobby and they love Trump. So there is certainly a lot of synergy between the two. And, I really hope that in November, if Bobby has polled nationally consistently over that 15% mark, that President Trump will attend the debates with Mr. Kennedy and whatever the Democrats throw up, if it's Biden or whoever else they have. Do you have any insight on that?
I really don't, other than to say that the Presidential Commission on Debates is not appointed by the president, is not a commission, and is not about debate. It's about limiting the debate. So if I were a presidential candidate, again, I'm not speaking for Trump, I'm speaking for myself, but I would not be locked into any debate schedule that involves the networks or the presidential commission. This artificial 15% being the deciding factor, as we saw with Gary Johnson, as soon as he got 15%, they changed it to 20.
They moved the goalpost.
They moved the goalpost. So, I mean, the measure ought to be, can you get 270 electoral votes? That's going to be very tough for Robert Kennedy. I'm not sure that he makes it. We shall see.
Yeah. I mean, for debates outside the box, I'd love to see President Trump, RFK Jr., and Joe Rogan at a table together. No script, no time thing. Lincoln Douglas. Talk directly to the American people. What do you think about that, Roger?
I think you meant Joe Biden, not Joe Rogan.
Joe Biden. Joe Rogan moderating, hosting.
Oh, I see. I got you.
And then how about Tulsi in a rematch with Kamala? I mean, come on.
That would be a wipeout. That would be
lights out.
That would be great to see.
Well, fantastic. Well, we're coming up in that 45-minute mark, Roger, and we want to be respectful of your time. And obviously, after we're end here, if you could hang out with us for a minute, we can chat afterwards. But please tell everybody where they can find your work and how they can support you and what's next for Roger Stone.
Well, go to stonezone.com. From there, you can find everything I'm doing. Stonezone.com. Costs you nothing to subscribe. And you can see my daily show, which is called The Stone Zone, which appears on Rumble, a number of other platforms. You can also hear my WABC Sunday radio show, which airs Sundays from 4 to 6 Eastern time in New York City, but also on WABCradio.com. We're live streaming in 173 countries worldwide. You can get all of my books, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, The Clinton's War on Women, in which I exposed Bill Clinton as a serial sexual assaulter and rapist. And I am the first, I think, major author in the country to expose Jeffrey Epstein and what he was doing on his island and his connection to the Clintons. And then also, of course, the Bush crime family. You can get your Roger Stone T-shirts, as we've discussed. It's a lot of good stuff going on there. So go to StoneZone.com. It's a great jumping off point. You can find everything I'm doing right there.
Well, fantastic. Well, Roger, we really appreciate you taking the time. And of course, we would love to have you on again in the near future, and we'll definitely keep in touch. So everybody listening who's tuned in before, we thank you again for joining us here on Jackman Radio. And if this is your first time joining us, hit that subscribe button. And if you want to support the channel, go to patreon.com/Jackman Radio. All the links are below. We appreciate you tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, folks.